Talk Farm to Me is the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. I wonder if you think about your power and the power you don't know you have. I'm guessing no. Most people are more in their heads about how they get all of the little things in life taken care of. Housework, bills, getting the kids off to school, checking in with older parents, and getting to work on time in something that's not too wrinkled. And then there's filling the fridge with groceries and getting dinner on the table. We nearly have no time to dive into our own power. But here, we unpack it a little bit, and what's funny is that your power, the power you don't really know you have, also aligns with filling the fridge and deciding what to make for dinner. It's a mental multitasking where you can check more than one item off your to-do list by just being here. Today, when you meet first-generation farmer Kelly Babin of Howling Flats Farm in Canaan, Connecticut, you will see that your power to feed your family healthy food is also packaged neatly with taking good care of the environment. Oh boy, that feels good to me. We all care. And when you arrive in your office for the day, laptop keys, tap, tap, tapping, you can feel good that farmers like Kelly are building a healthier environment for us all. Let's step back 14 years for a minute and see how this all started.
So I did start the farm in 2010 with my son. We came across this property here in Canaan. It was a horse racing facility. It's got a 10,000 square foot center stall concrete barn, which is lovely for horses. Not so great when you do pasture raised animals. So I have a lot of gates that crisscross my alleyways so that the animals can get in and out. And that involves a lot of climbing on my end. So when we first started out, of course, we had chickens, the gateway drug to farming. We started off leasing the pasture to a guy who had some cows. He wasn't so great about taking care of his cattle, so we bought them and begged everybody in the area that we knew to give us information and help us do things the right way. So we sort of learned by trial and error, fortunately, not at the expense of the animals, just at the expense of our labor. And then I got a call a year or two later from a gal who had bought a teacup pig. And she raised peaches in her house and taught her how to do tricks. And of course, peaches just kept growing because, you know, there's not really any such thing as a teacup pig. For whatever reason, she couldn't keep her anymore. And she's like, would you take her? And I said, sure, but I can't promise that she's going to live forever. I'm not running a rescue. I'm trying to start a livestock farm. But she said, great, will you take her two daughters too? So then we had pigs. And for Mother's Day the next year, my son got me a boar, what every mom wants for Mother's Day. And we started breeding pigs and fortunately had a number of great resources in our area, people that had been doing it for years that were so generous with their time and their expertise and so helpful. So we started breeding hogs. And when my daughter-in-law got pregnant with my first grandson, she stepped away a little bit from doing chores, but then when she got pregnant with my second one, shortly after Merrick was born, they had to move. Fortunately, not very far, but it just got to be too much. I had 20 piglets milk in my house when they stepped away from the farm. Good timing for them, maybe. So now I no longer breed hogs. I buy in stock and raise 3 to 4 groups of 30 to 40 hogs at a time outside. And I now have 3 grandchildren. So hopefully someday they will be able to be more helpful and interested in more than the tractors, because right now even tractors take precedence over baby lambs as far as they're concerned. So now I raise hogs. I have some sheep. I now have 20 ewes. I've been doing sheep for 5 years now, and this year added 18 boer goats to start offering goat meat to the local region or the extended region. It's not a prevalent product in our area yet, but I hope that it will be. I love it. I think it's really tasty.
And you're still doing chickens or no?
I sell chickens from another farm. I'm fortunate to sell product to a local preparatory school in our area. They have a whole animals program, which is amazing. And during COVID, they had product and no customers, and I had customers and no product. So we have started an arrangement where I can actually buy back my product from the school. He buys my whole animals, but if I need certain cuts, it allows me access to his chicken supplier, which is incredible. It's the best chicken ever. And I don't have to raise it, which is even better for me. Yeah, so I have access to chicken and sustainable seafood, and it really allows me to diversify my product line, which is fantastic.
And you're one woman with 100 head of animals there.
I am. I'm fortunate that my boyfriend is equally crazy, and he has some Angus cattle. So we run the cows together, and we have a number of leased pastures. So in reality, the cows are on leased pasture most of the year. The spring group comes home January, February, depending on when the ground's frozen enough to calve. And then they go back to pasture April, May, depending on when the mud has dried again. My life revolves around mud. And then the fall group in the past always stayed off farm. But 2 years ago, we lost one to a predator, which was the first ever at that location. So now in the fall, we round everybody up and bring them here for calving because I have the four livestock guardian dogs who don't go in while they're calving. But their presence alone, knock on whatever wood I can find, has meant that I haven't lost anything on the farm in any of the areas that the dogs have access to.
I know that when you're talking about your animals, that you're talking about the importance of raising your animals in a humane way. And I'd love for you to share what that means because I think that people hear it, maybe they see a label, but what does that mean?
I am certified humane through a Greener World.
Greener World is a nonprofit organization offering certification programs, including Certified Humane, which focuses on ensuring that animals are raised with welfare in mind. Farms meeting the criteria earn the label, indicating animals have space, shelter, and access to clean water and food. Certification also requires no routine use of antibiotics or growth hormones, providing consumers assurance of ethical farming practices.
I like their program because they actually come out and audit me. They come out every year. They come to every pasture. They come to every location that the cows are at. They inspect everything. They really do follow through. It's not one of those I can send $100 and I'm certified. So I feel like that holds weight and it's something that consumers can really believe in because you can't just buy it. You can't just stick it on there.
And what are they looking
And
for in their certification specifically?
they are looking for quality pastures. They're looking for, as far as your handling situations, the load chutes, any of the sorting equipment that we use. I'm not certified grass-fed, but they're looking at what they're eating, the minerals, making sure that they have access at all times to shelter of whatever sort, even if it's natural barns, shade, winter protection. A responsible use of antibiotics, outdoor pasture-based management, high animal welfare, no added hormones or animal byproducts, and environmental stewardship. So if they were just on a feedlot, I wouldn't be able to be certified.
A feedlot is a facility where livestock, typically cattle, are confined and fed a high-energy diet to quickly fatten them up for slaughter. The goal is to efficiently convert feed into weight gain, allowing cattle to reach market weight in a shorter time. Feedlots are commonly used in intensive beef production systems, which are a cause of various environmental and animal welfare concerns associated with intensive confinement and high-density feeding operations.
They're really looking at a holistic view of what's best for the animal and the best practices for the animal.
And when you say you're not grass-fed certified, why is that? What, how are you managing the feed for your animals?
So I'm not certified grass-fed because my cows do get some corn. It's a handling tool. It's a 5 gallon bucket amongst a group of 30 of them. So it's like getting, a mini Snickers bar. And I need to see them get up every day. I need to see everybody come to the trough and line up and put eyes on them and make sure no one's limping and no one's got an issue. And shaking some hay doesn't cut it.
They're just not impressed with hay.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. It's too old hat. So because of that, I would never be able to be certified grass-fed because they do get that little bit of corn. And again, I don't consider it food. And I know some certifications allow up to 20% or something of their diet to be other products, but that includes Skittles. So I'd rather forego a certification than get one that isn't really honest.
Cows like Skittles?
Cows will eat most of anything that you put in front of them. And there are farms that sort of like the spent brewer's grain or any other sort of byproduct of like bread factories. Or, you know, I know a lot of times the food bank, the local food bank used to call me to take the bread for the sheep or the pigs. I did that for about a month or two. And actually the pigs, it was the worst batch of pigs I ever raised because there's no nutrient value in bread, really. It's just sort of a filler. And they were just filling and not really eating.
I hear about the spent grains and I think people get excited about it because it's like a higher level recycling. Like here we have our beer and we made all this stuff, but this byproduct is going to agriculture. What's the downside of that for animals?
I'm not a nutritional expert and I know a lot of people feed spent grains, so I can't speak to that. I just don't. To me, it feels like it's a filler. And I guess added to something else, it must have something in it. But generally speaking, a lot of those programs, I think, end up just being empty calories.
They're really meant to eat grass.
They are. They really are. There was a farm not too far from here that his cows ended up with a bunch of ulcers because of the corn. You know, they were eating so much corn. It was too acidic.
Did you know that a cow has four compartments in its stomach? The rumen, the reticulum, the omasum, and the abomasum? Grasses and other roughage that cows eat naturally are hard to break down and digest, which is why they have developed these specialized compartments. Each compartment has a special job to do that helps the cow digest these tough foods. I'm pretty sure there isn't a compartment for Skittles.
I'm curious about your community. Now, Canaan is closest to where?
Well, I'm in Litchfield County, so I am 15 minutes to Massachusetts and 15 minutes to New York State. So we are right up in the corner.
And Litchfield County isn't so much farmland anymore, is it?
Connecticut isn't so much farmland anymore. There are a few. There's a number of large dairies in our area, and there is some farmland, but like anywhere, and like a number of the pastures that we lease, it's residences that we are fortunate enough that they're willing to let us put cattle on their 75 acres of lawn that would otherwise just be lawn.
And they get a tax write-off for doing that?
They do. They get a tax break for the property that's in agricultural.
And so just a little bit further here in terms of Canaan, you're in the middle of Litchfield County and you are close to three states. Yeah. So what does that mean for your customer base?
I wholesale to a number of farm stands and, you know, veggie farmers. So through their season, I do a lot of wholesaling with them. And that's throughout Litchfield County, out into Hartford County. I have about a 80-mile radius of farm stands that I deliver to. I'm fortunate to have a health food store in West Hartford, which is a whole different market than my area.
In what way?
Socioeconomically, it's a different market. Litchfield County has some areas that are very well-to-do. My town is not that town. I used to do a farmer's market in a pretty affluent town, and it's a lot of weekenders that own those homes. And they're like, oh, it's frozen? I'm like, yeah, but you know, if you put it in water, it'll be thawed in 20 minutes. It's a steak, you know? No, I think we're just going to go out to dinner. You know, although economically, you would think that I should be able to do really well selling meat in my local area. My target audience and most of my customers are upper middle class people that cook for their families. I guess that's sort of the bottom line. They cook and want to feed our healthy family food to their families. So that puts me a lot more into Hartford County, where those moms are willing to spend more on quality meats, quality proteins, maybe are tired of going to Whole Foods and not finding what they're looking for. And actually, I think I'm cheaper than Whole Foods and I deliver and they can buy in bulk. So yeah, that's sort of my ideal customer base.
One of the challenges of being a small farmer is having to do it all. The books, the animal care, the equipment and facility, maintenance and repairs, the labor, all of it. And the marketing and customer service. Kelly, like a lot of small farmers, are self-critical about their communication with customers. Is it enough? Is it too much? And now that there are so many channels, it can be really challenging, time-wise, message-wise, and also figuring out what customers want to hear and what will make them say, oh, I do need to put more meat in my freezer.
I try to do the social media thing. I don't know how effective I really am at that. Yeah, it's hard because I don't believe that showing cute baby lambs really sells lamb chops. As much as I wish that there was a way to impress upon people that they wouldn't exist if not for that purpose. These animals wouldn't be here if not for that purpose. And I give them an amazing life. I do all that I can to make sure that they have the best days and they're raised as naturally as possible. In the end, they are for me. You know, I mean, that is why they're here. I had a gal from the gym say, I'd love to buy your meat, but I can't know where my meat comes from. And I had someone else shared one of my posts, and he happens to be a chef. And it was I think it was just a video of like Rammy eating grass or something. And she was like, you go to the farm and pick what animal you're going to eat? And I was like, no. They're conveniently in USDA, you know, Cryovac packages. And I'm also fortunate to be selling through the Dine program in New London. They run a food bank, a soup kitchen, and they offer our products. I sell it at a discount, and happily for them to be able to offer our products to their clientele. I sell through Brass City Harvest, which is in Waterbury. They're a co-op that manages a number of grants so that the food goes to senior citizens, pre-K program. They do an on-site cooking class with one of the local, can't remember the name of the group, but a senior citizen group that comes in and they cook and they send them home with me. And then they also have an online store so that Waterbury is a food desert. It's a city. So there are some gardens there, but there isn't anybody raising livestock, obviously, in that area. So I'm thrilled to be able to have them offer our product and give people access to it.
Kelly is always looking at new avenues for getting her products to new customers. At farmers markets, through food banks, and now she is preparing to add shipping her products regionally. This takes a lot of work that you probably don't consider, and an intense infrastructure system to support it.
I went from 14 chest freezers and a small, like a Meals on Wheels kind of truck body freezer that was just time and back-breaking. And anytime I was getting a delivery, I'm fortunate that the slaughterhouse will deliver to me. But when you get two pallets of meat coming back and you're looking at chest freezers that are almost full, it's like freezer Jenga nightmare. The 40 foot, it's a shipping container, but I do have a freezer truck for my deliveries. That's the mobile part. But the 40 foot freezer allows me to, number one, when they deliver, I just take my forks and put the whole pallet in my freezer and I can put it away at my leisure and sort it and organize it and not have to climb over 95 boxes to try to find that one package of sweet Italian sausage that I used to have to do. And yeah, I do have capacity. I do end up sitting on some product, you know, because of these programs with the food banks. I have the opportunity to maybe sell things that aren't necessarily selling, but I generally turn over the product fairly quickly. But this time of year, like every grocery store, every restaurant, every everything, things do slow down.
Farmers have to deal with these slowdowns in the market and also with customer patterns. Maybe one week there's a rush on ground beef, and the next week it's something else. If you are a small farmer, you have to build in many avenues to ensure your security.
And I never have a guarantee on the farm stands that sell my product, how much they'll sell, if they'll choose to sell it again. So
you're hustling.
Oh, I hustle. I am like queen of the meat slinging. But even though I make home delivery, people are like, oh, yeah, no, Tuesday doesn't work for me. And it's like, well, you're an hour away from me. And Tuesday is the day that I'm there. Is there a neighbor I can leave it with? Is you want to leave a cooler on your porch? I have some disposable coolers. I can leave you a cooler. No, I don't, you know. So I feel like to make it even more convenient for people to be able to ship, they're used to getting this stuff in the mail.
Convenience. That's a word we really need to unpack. We have gotten so used to having what we want when we want it that we're kind of unwilling to wait for something of quality. When we think about convenience in our own lives, I think it's really worth considering a mindset shift here. It's one that would really help small farmers, which in turn helps you.
They're used to getting whatever other stuff they order, Amazon, etc. That would be, number one, I think it would buy me back a day, a week, even though I have to pack the orders and get them shipped, to be able to ship to 20 locations in one day, even if it's one drive to the UPS FedEx place. I just can't. I'm getting older. I just can't keep running. I go to bed at 7:30 every night. So I feel like shipping is the next step to buying back a little bit of my life, at the same time expanding my reach and being able to be more convenient for my customers.
On a small farm, it's never enough. Not only is Kelly taking good care of her animals with a very intensive process of moving them from pasture to pasture and making sure that they're well cared for and healthy, considering all of the different needs that her customers have, and she's also very focused on her land.
I have huge goals for my property itself. So as I had said, this was a horse racing facility. So I have the remains of a half mile measured racetrack around the perimeter of my fields where they stripped all of the soil and filled with sand, of course. And all of my pastures were just for horses. And horses are lovely, but generally speaking, horse facilities aren't all that concerned about the quality of the pasture because the horses eat hay. And so my fields are compacted and wide open and flooding and ponding. So my goal this year and a number of the grants that I've am working on are to really, at least my largest 3-acre pasture, to fully remediate it. I mean, I've tried cover crops, I've tried plowing, harrowing, sorghum a couple of years.
Both harrowing and sorghum cultivation can aid in soil remediation for pastures, but through different mechanisms. Harrowing involves breaking up compacted soil using a tool called a harrow, aerating it, and incorporating organic matter, which can rejuvenate pastures by improving soil structure and promoting nutrient cycling. On the other hand, sorghum, which refers to a genus of flowering plants in the grass family, with its deep root system, can penetrate compacted soil layers, break up hard pans, and enhance soil structure by increasing aggregation and organic matter content. When used as a cover or rotational crop, sorghum can help remediate degraded soils, reduce erosion, and enhance fertility. Together, these practices contribute to healthier soil conditions in pastures, supporting more productive and sustainable grazing systems.
I didn't want to do corn because I don't want to spray, but I am the queen of growing weeds and only weeds. And the pentometer, is that the one that tests the pressure? The little device that tells you the pressures of your soil. I think they say roots can grow up to 30 pounds, and I exceed 250 in most of my fields, which explains why nothing wants to grow. So working with Berkshire AgriVentures and a number of their experts, they wrote up a climate smart plan, or at least a guideline for some goals. And I'm hoping to rip that field, like deep rip that field, and plant silvopasture to number one, have forage for the sheep and goats.
Silvopasture is an agroforestry practice that combines trees or shrubs with livestock grazing. Trees are intentionally planted within pastures to provide benefits such as shade, improved forage quality, erosion control, and carbon sequestration. Silvopasture promotes biodiversity, enhances soil health, and increases farm resilience by integrating trees, forage, and livestock production in a symbiotic system.
Number two, eventually have shade for the animals for when the cows are home and improve the pasture itself. I mean, the grasses will grow better with shade instead of baking in the sun. And if I can get that done, I'm only 15 acres, an acre of it's my barn. If I could get that field done, in my long-term plan would be to do the other fields to improve the pasture and to hopefully put in like a little mini orchard or a pumpkin patch, or I put in a blueberry patch this year in a section to try and have events where the community can come and they can see what regenerative agriculture looks like in practice, you know, animals right out on the field amongst the forage and enjoying some nibbling treats when they're safe for them to be able to nibble, and come pick pumpkins and take your picture with Simon.
Yes, donkey selfies are a big draw around here.
Kelly was a recipient of a Four Farmers Movement grant to support the work she does on her farm and some very specific equipment for feeding her goats. Farmers know what they need best.
I don't know if you've already purchased your feeder for your goats.
I did. At the moment, the cows that are in the recovery ward are using it because I had the sheep using it. The sheep had to shuffle down to let the cow, one of those Jenga games, but I love it. I was using a cow feeder, one of the ones that has like the basket that the bale goes in and they can eat at it, but they couldn't really reach it that well. They could jump in, but they couldn't really reach it that well. And now they are using a calf feeder, which holds the bale up in the air and they eat it from the bottom, which is nice because they don't get in it. But I have young goats and they can't all reach it either. So I spent a lot of time pulling down hay and putting it in a separate bale feeder. And so I am very, very excited to use that feeder with the goats. It is just going to be huge, just amazing, time saver. And it's so lightweight. I mean, it holds the bale. I could actually make bigger bales. It holds the bale. It only stands like a foot off the ground.
I think these are the things that when, you know, when we're enjoying a really nice meal, whether it's in a restaurant or at home, that nobody thinks about what the farmer is doing to make it happen. This is the perfect example, like the specificity of your hay feeder.
Exactly. Yeah.
Howling Flats Farm is 10 years old this year. That's 10 years of hard work and learning on the job, trial and error, pivoting, and even struggling as the people who work the farm have changed to make way for grandchildren. And make way it does. For now, it's providing fascinating tractor action, something I swear I could have sold tickets for when my kids were younger. But there's more that this farm is giving them and you, whether you live in shopping distance or not. Howling Flats Farm and its chief steward, Kelly Babin, are deeply committed to animal welfare. That sounds basic, but Kelly is willing to open up her pastures and barns and to line up her cattle for inspection to show that she's doing it right. I think if any of us had the choice, and we do, we want our meat to have a good life before it gets to our plate. Even those folks among us who are not ready to think about the animal in concert with our own dinners. What's more, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan or have another reason you don't eat meat, you want more farmers like Kelly raising cattle the way she does. Here's the thing we don't think about nearly enough. If our cattle are being raised humanely, they are healthier for us to eat, and they are providing a deep and iterative benefit to the land. When you raise cattle well, they fertilize and aerate the land, giving it more opportunities to host thriving organic matter and to sequester carbon deep in the soil. Kelly is working on improving her land to serve her animals better repairing damage that was done before her reign. Are you seeing the domino effect here? Humane animal husbandry leads to healthy food and healthy land, and you have supported that work and that ongoing process just by buying a stake. It's your power, a superpower, I might add, and one I don't think you have considered fully. Start thinking about it now. Talk Farm to Me is the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. There are some changes going on here under the hood, much like Kelly is working to improve her land. I am working to fertilize and prune the core elements of this podcast. Get ready for some changes that may make you wiggle for a minute, but will soon become part of what you look forward to about this show. I am your host, Dana DePrima, and I look forward to being together with you on your walk, in your car, or as you do the dishes. See you next week for another deep dive into just how powerful you are, even if you don't know it yet.